Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Hey, today we're looking at onshore, offshore, what I consider the so-called legitimate financial service havens like London, Zurich, or Dublin, where the world's dirty money mixes with the squeaky clean until eventually the entire basket of laundry is all kind of dingy and slightly putrid, Stacy.
Yeah, so all the money in the world seems to get a little bit dirty after the London and Dublin and Switzerland sort of financial centers are done with it. You know, the UK banks have to divulge their relations with the Panama Papers. So I want to look at the UK banks in particular and their role in this, because, of course, HSBC is one of the big names yet again involved in yet another scandal. So I want to look at this one headline, Alexander Lebedev. He says, Vladimir Putin is not the villain. It's the West's banks laundering money. Highly paid British, American, and Swiss bankers and lawyers have helped in suspicious and bogus deals. Now, he says what is troubling to him about sensationally and wrongly placing Putin at the heart of a corrupt web is that we lose sight of the main issue these wonderful leaks expose so well, that the money laundering and theft that is now so rife in countries such as Russia, China, and Nigeria is only made possible by a huge machine operated by highly paid bankers, lawyers, and accountants from the West. And he himself, when he was in the Duma, Alexander Lebedev, who now, at least his son, owns the Evening Standard in the UK, he had money stolen from his company, which he was forced to put into a trust when he was in the Duma. And now having to go through all the London banking centers and the high-paid London lawyers, it's almost impossible for him to get it.
Yeah, well, I'll give you my insight into something here that I would characterize as experience I've picked up by starting a company here in the UK myself. Mm-hmm. And the thing about the UK economy is that it's rentier versus entrepreneurial. You don't have the Elon Musks, you know, the Steve Jobs, these folks here in the UK, the entrepreneurs. You have instead the rentiers. And the rentiers are folks that like to insert themselves into all manner of transactions and get a fee. And the entire economy here is pretty much based on this rentier concept. And entrepreneurs are actually looked down on. You know, Richard Branson being a guy who you often hear as being a villain, as a guy who's above his station, and he's looked down on. And whereas people that can insert themselves into the process, they can sue you, they can muck about, they can cause trouble, they can complain, they can get a lawsuit. That's the rentier mentality, and that's what drives this economy. So this Panama Papers is really an extension of that. It's just, it's not that people are, if you took this away from the UK economy, there would be almost nothing left because there are no entrepreneurs here. I mean, except for paper pushers and financiers, you've got very little going on here and Rolls-Royce jet engine. That's about it.
Well, it's a very complicated story because there are many, many layers to it. There's tax evasion. There's tax avoidance. There's just a good old-fashioned offshore company, a trust that you might have maybe because, say, you live in Cyprus and you've already been burned once because you had a small company and any of your deposits over $100,000 were stolen, or your WikiLeaks, which is admitted to having an offshore company because they were embargoed by the big banks because the U.S. didn't like them. Now, then there's the stolen and looted money. And it seems that the big banks here don't seem to discern between those that are, in fact, they seem to, in a way, almost enjoy the stolen money more. And Lebedev points out in particular, for example, a guy who was given political asylum here in the UK. Meanwhile, the likes of Andrei Borodin, wanted in Russia for allegedly stealing hundreds of millions of dollars from his bank, sets himself up as a dissident and is granted asylum in the UK, where he lives in the mansion he was allowed to buy for £140 million. He denies the charges and says they are politically motivated. His two alleged accomplices, however, have just been jailed by a Moscow court. So he bought a £140 million house. And of course, property in London is also another offshore vehicle. But studying all of these is our guest, Max, and that's Ian Fraser. He's the author of Shredded, Inside RBS, the Bank That Broke Britain.
All right, Ian Fraser, welcome to Double Down. Yeah, your book, Inside RBS, the Bank That Broke Britain, really a timely book.
Yes. Well, I mean, in there I do reveal that, you know, RBS was engaged in money laundering through its Kutsam, and surprise, surprise, one of the biggest users of Mossack Fonseca's services. in terms of setting up shell companies on behalf of wealthy clients was Coutts, which set up 500, according to these papers, which is quite a significant number. It's not as many as HSBC, which set up 2,200 shell companies on behalf of clients, but it's still quite a lot.
Right. It also has the distinction of being the Queen's Bank, I believe.
Yes, exactly. I wonder if any of these were made for the royal family, but who knows?
Now, everybody's a bit confused by this because it's Panama Papers and everybody assumes it's Panama, but this was just a law firm based in Panama, and many of the offshore shell companies are actually set up in British islands.
Yes, exactly. I think it was after Noriega that the law firm Mossack Fonseca, which is the law firm whose files were hacked, decided not to house so many of the shell and shelf companies in Panama itself, but actually essentially corrupted the government of British Virgin Islands and persuaded them that it should be, you know, its next port of call. So that's why I think there are something like 300,000 companies located in the BVI, an island or group of islands which has only 22,000 people.
Could the Queen or Parliament end BVI's role as an offshore tax haven tomorrow if they wanted?
Yes, they could. It's entirely within their gift. If the British government wished to close down the abuses that are occurring in BVI, they could, theoretically at least, shut it down as a tax haven. But I don't think the trouble is the population there is dependent on hosting companies and providing other services to companies for 50% of its revenue. So it wouldn't be a very popular move with the people of BVI, I guess.
It's very interesting, Ian, because I noticed that the right-wing press here in the UK, they've come up with a way to position Cameron as a victim in all of this, a victim of a wealth trap, which is the opposite of a poverty trap. They're saying he's wealthy, he was born wealthy, and in many instances, as is the case with David Cameron, you get trapped by your wealth, and we should feel sorry for him and accordingly. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's pretty ridiculous line to take. I mean, you know, there has been a tremendous amount of focus on David Cameron from all quarters over the past 6 days or 7 days or whatever. But in some ways, I see Cameron as a bit of a sideshow and or distraction, because, you know, the real issue is that there's a whole offshore system which is being used to channel vast amounts of illicit wealth, often by criminals, people in organized crime, gangsters, drug mafia, deposed despots, you know, who've totally looted their countries, et cetera, et cetera. And the focus on Blair Moore Holdings, Inc. and David Cameron, I would argue, is perhaps a distraction. I don't know if you'd agree with that. I do think that, you know, there's something rather dodgy about Blair Moore, which was established in 82 or something, and, you know, which had an army of about 50 Bahamas residents as directors to preserve the fiction that it was not controlled from the UK. So there was a kind of game of smoke and mirrors going on, led by Cameron's late father, Ian Cameron.
Hey there, this is Max Kaiser. I'm with Stacey Herbert. We got a new show here in Sputnik called Double Down.
So there are a lot of legitimate reasons to have an offshore trust or an offshore company, but what about the role that HSBC, the role that many London bankers and London lawyers play in the looting of nations? For example, when Gaddafi was overthrown and they found billions, tens of billions of his money was actually in London. Also, we mentioned in the top of the show, Andrei Borodin, who's given political asylum here, and he bought a £140 million property, which seems quite an obvious trigger to any normal person that this would be somebody who would be investigated where the source of funds came from. So what about the role of London, and not necessarily the tax avoidance services, but in harboring stolen money?
I think that the complicity and collusion of the professional services sector, which includes bankers, accountants, and lawyers, and others, including company registration agents, is one of the big scandals here. Because, and I think Alexander Lebedev highlighted that in his piece, the one you mentioned earlier. You know, these guys are seemingly, you know, have no moral scruples whatsoever. And as long as there's money to be made, they will help wealthy individuals to do pretty nefarious things. And a classic example, I think, is HSBC's role with the Syrian Rami Makhlouf, who in 2008 had sanctions imposed on him by the U.S. Treasury. Yet, 2 years after sanctions were imposed in 2010, HSBC wrote to the law firm Mossack Fonseca saying that it believed that Makhlouf's company, Drex Technologies, was of good standing. So he was a bank actually intervening on behalf of a client to kind of cleanse his reputation to an already very dodgy law firm. Even that was having doubts about whether it should continue to act for Mr. Makhlouf.
Of course, HSBC had pleaded guilty, essentially, to the Department of Justice for laundering money for the Mexican drug cartels. They laundered several $8 billion, I believe it was.
That's right. In December 2012, they entered a settlement with the U.S. Justice Department over the money laundering on behalf of Mexican drugs cartels.
Ian, let me ask you something. All this information is not new. You've been writing about it. We've been talking about it for a long time. Why do you think suddenly this has broken out as a big issue right now? And do you think it has, to put it in the Hollywood term, does it have legs? You know, are we going to be talking about this in a couple of weeks' time, or will this just fade as it always does?
I think this one will continue for several months, actually, just because of the sheer quantity of data. I mean, this one is 30 times larger than the offshore leaks of 2013, which came from BVI. But we've had a whole succession of these. We've had SwissLeaks, which was about HSBC promoting tax fraud to wealthy customers in Europe. We've had LuxLeaks, which was about PwC setting up very convoluted structures to minimize tax on behalf of multinationals. We had the original offshore leaks in 2013, and now these Panama Papers in April 2016. I think that the mere fact that leaks are being made from these various organizations, from inside these various organizations, often by very brave people who are risking their entire future by leaking the information, and the way in which this is being handled by organizations like the International Consortium, ICIJ, International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, is transformative, because I don't think governments on their own are going to change anything. So I think it takes pressure and it takes public disgust, a combination of those things.
Let me follow up a little bit on that, because let's talk about the language here, because okay, you're an author, so you deal with language all the time.
Yes.
You know, for so long, critics of all this, they haven't had the language to speak about it. They say, there's a wealth and income gap. We want you to be more fair. We want you to be nicer. But there was very few details on the ground. They didn't know the language that they needed to speak. But suddenly, you have the rank-and-file activists are talking about the minutia of offshore banking. Is that going to be a game changer?
I think it is. I think, you know, there's much more awareness of the purposes for which offshore finance is being put, who's using it, and, you know, basically how it's being abused, both legitimately or legally and, you know, more concerningly, illegally. But I think a critical statistic is one which in the UK, here in the UK, tax avoided, evaded, and uncollected because of things like tax evasion, tax fraud, and aggressive tax avoidance is £120 billion per annum. That's an estimate from the Tax Justice Network and one of the unions. And yet, the amount of money that's lost to benefit fraud is $1.2 billion, which is 100 times less than the amount that is lost to the offshore system. So I think, you know, those sorts of figures need to be publicized more widely. One thing I was going to say is to do with a man called Edward Troup, who is now the executive chairman of HMRC, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, and he was appointed on the 5th of April. Now, this guy spent his entire career at a law firm called Simmons & Simmons in the City of London, basically advising large corporates on how they could structure their affairs in order to pay as little tax as possible. And he actively campaigned on behalf of corporations against the government in 1999 when he blocked attempts by Gordon Brown to ensure, you know, to rein in the abuse of offshore havens by corporations. So the guy's essentially a leader in advising corporations on how to reduce or minimize their tax.
And now he's the head of the HMRC.
Yeah, well, sounds like Sodom and Gomorrah. Show me one good man. I think was the biblical quote. And they couldn't do it, so they just got rid of the whole thing, scorched earth. Oh, yeah. Well, that's it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. Thanks to our guest, Ian Fraser, author of Shredded, Inside RBS, the Bank That Broke Britain. Until next time, bye, y'all.